the last presenter always has to hold down the house. So if you need a little sugar, I think they've got some candies up here, and I'm happily going to throw them into the crowd if you look like you're falling asleep. How's that? So today I'm going to be speaking to you about one of our pilot projects that we ran in 2010 and 2011, and I'll talk a little bit about the entirety of the pilot project and then go specifically into one of the core components of it, because that's really what my focus is for our presentation today. So I have no relationships to disclose. My goal with this presentation is to describe the issue of cancer stigma globally, to explain the methodology for the National Cancer Stigma Intervention that we ran in South Africa, and then to discuss opportunities for how we can engage young adults in community education efforts. So let me take you all the way back to 2007, where my foundation did a little bit of research to figure out how we would expand globally into the programmatic realm internationally. So we did global public perception research in 9 countries, including France, Italy, China, Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, South Africa, India, and Japan. And this occurred over 18 months. And really what we wanted to do was to give people affected by cancer the opportunity to share their experiences and to see how these various societies viewed cancer. So we did a media audit, we did some extensive public opinion surveying, and we surveyed about 4,500 people across the 9 countries, and we did some semi-structured interviews with healthcare providers, with cancer survivors, with NGOs, and here is what we found. Overarchingly, most countries around the world perceive a stigma around cancer, and you can see a couple of snapshots of some of what these different beliefs were. So even though there were some different cultural beliefs in each place, what we really saw was that there was a lot of fear and a lot of silence around cancer in particular. And this was really having an effect on how individuals and communities were treating people who had cancer and how individuals were accessing care. We can see that cancer stigma of cancer is something that can affect individuals across the cancer control continuum. So for example, if we're looking at prevention, we in South Africa heard a lot of beliefs around, oh, cancer is caused by witchcraft, or there's nothing you can do to reduce your risk of cancer. So having beliefs like that might actually prevent you from taking any healthy, health-seeking behaviors in order to really improve improve your wellness, and to be able to prevent yourself from getting cancers that are preventable. In terms of detection, a lot of fear that we saw around diagnosis and a lot of beliefs that cancer equals death, or a lot of fear of pain in terms of the actual detection methods. In terms of the treatment, we ran into some myths and misconceptions around treatment means, okay, in terms of radiation in particular, if I go in for this type of treatment, my organs are going to be cooked, my flesh will be burned. Or if I take the pain medicine that I'm given as part of my treatment regimen, I'll become addicted. And then similarly, in terms of general survivorship, we see a lot of externalized stigma or discrimination. So individuals being fired from their jobs because they were diagnosed with cancer. And so the employer's thinking, they're not going to be able to undergo their normal job duties. Some of the worst types of enacted stigmas we saw were actual, social isolation, people being left by their significant others. So how do we address the problem? With an implementing partner, who is John Snow Inc., we launched this massive national pilot. And we did 2 pilots, actually, 8 months apart, one in South Africa, one in Mexico. And the goal, really, was to illustrate that cancer is survivable, that cancer survivors can lead healthy, productive lives during and after cancer, and we wanted to encourage both personal and public dialogue around the disease. So keep in mind also that each of these campaigns were targeted towards the specific needs and interests of the country. The issues differed in each country, and we really looked at what those stigma issues were with some in-depth research before we actually got started. And by tailoring these a little bit apart, we were able to actually glean some lessons learned from South Africa and utilize that knowledge as we did the work in Mexico. But today, primarily, I'll be talking about what we did in South Africa. So the sort of underpinning or the backbone of our initiative was the research and data collection that we did. And this was one of 5 key components. And really, in, by having five key components, we were able to test out certain tenets or elements across both countries to see if at the end of our pilots, we'd be able to have something that looked like a replicable model. So in terms of our research, similar to my colleague Eugene, who was talking about doing a baseline and an end line, we, in our baseline and our end line, we interviewed over 800 people in each country to measure whether we were able to move the needle with the intervention, really improve perceptions and knowledge and attitudes. And we did, additionally, focus group discussions and collected countless stories and interviews and quotes and videos. The second tenet of our initiative was this mass media campaign. And here you see a photo of David Nkepha, who is a throat cancer survivor. And he was just one of, in South Africa, one of nine cancer survivors that we documented their stories and disseminated in three different languages. We aired them on TV, these PSAs, we aired them on TV in 520 clinics across the country. We did an SMS text campaign. We did a nine-week radio call-in show. And we did a lot of radio PSAs as well, in addition to the TV PSAs, actually primarily radio PSAs, with these nine different survivors. And what we really saw was that there was an incredible surge in interest from hearing individuals speak about their particular stories. These are real individuals. So community outreach, this is what I'm going to talk about primarily for the rest of my presentation. In South Africa, we launched this massive door-to-door campaign, which I'll get to in just a minute. But in Mexico, we also, in addition to the door-to-door campaign, we did a training of trainers. And so this was really a sustainable model for us to be able to educate a few and reach a lot more. But I'm going to actually talk a little bit more about the former in just a minute. In addition, we did some public relations, a lot of outreach to local journalists, DJs on the radio, who became really bought into our efforts, and we engaged them in sort of boot camp trainings and then had them participate in a variety of different events with us in both countries. And then some fun events that we did in both South Africa and Mexico to engage communities in fun activities that were community built. So health fairs, concerts, sports competitions, wrestling events, fun engaging events that really made sense in the context of the cultural fabric that were planned with the local community leadership, and these were an opportunity for individuals to come into contact with cancer survivors and their stories and to really feel what it's like to hear about cancer and cancer stigma from an individual survivor's perspective. So, talking about the door-to-door campaign, we really had three key goals with it, and you can see them here: to empower youth community health workers to raise awareness of cancer by engaging in personal, informal discussions in their community. Second, we really wanted to address gaps in knowledge regarding basic cancer and cancer information and cancer-related stigma and survivorship. And then third, we needed to provide improved access to resources, because if you're raising awareness around some of the issues, the second question you're going to get from someone once they have that aha moment is, so where do I go for help? And so the door-to-door campaign was conceived of during some of the community meetings that we held early on in our initiative in response to the needs of the local community. And again, these were our three goals, which we kept it pretty simple. You might be thinking, all right, well, how powerful or pervasive could some of these stigmas or myths be? Why are we combating them? Well, this is just a snapshot of some of what we saw in South Africa. And interestingly, these did not emerge during our baseline data collection with the knowledge attitudes practice survey that we did with over 800 people. Where they really emerged was in the focus group discussions we had with local community leaders and with NGOs and individuals in the communities. And so seeing some of these myths and misperceptions and the sort of lack of knowledge around basic cancer information, there was really a lot of work we had to do in order to improve quality of life for people who were going to be diagnosed or were diagnosed with cancer, and also to improve social support for people who are dealing with a cancer diagnosis in these communities who might be facing some externalized stigma. So, what did we do? Our implementation strategy for the door-to-door campaign. Well, we launched it in three townships across the country. We were working in the black township. So, as most of you probably know, South Africa is 85% black. And we found coverage in three of the largest townships. We worked in Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Gauteng, and Soweto, Khayelitsha, and Dansane. We recruited young adult volunteers who initially we worked to see if there were pre-existing community health workers through existing organizations working in those communities, and if there weren't, then we recruited additionally volunteers that were going to be qualified. And then we trained these 85 young individuals. We provided a two-day training on the basics of cancer stigma survivorship, and that was in December of 2010, and then we did a pickup training 4 months later in March of 2011, and then we got them started with their outreach activities. So we sent pairs of volunteers out, and they visited 5 to 8 households daily according to a SKIP algorithm, so they would do every fifth house. And they held in-depth conversations with the members of that household that lasted between 15 and sometimes 60 minutes, which was absolutely amazing. And they were providing a lot of in-depth information. Who were some of these volunteers? Well, this is one of our youth volunteers, Sia, and he actually revealed, it was revealed in the course of us recruiting him and working with him, that he was a cancer survivor. He was diagnosed with leukemia when he was just a kid. And it was only after working with us as a peer educator during the initiative on the door-to-door campaign that he actually came out with his diagnosis and said, "I had leukemia when I was a kid." He sort of found a community and became one of our superstar peer educators, and then would use that as a tool when he went to the different households in his community to talk to people about what does it look like to have cancer. Oh, look, I had cancer and I survived. It's possible to live with and after cancer. So pretty amazing to be able to have a story of your own and share that with someone. There's nothing like a real individual story that can be so powerful. So what did we accomplish? Well, if I had a drum roll, I would roll it. In 8 months, we reached 17,000 households with 85 people. That's a lot. We reached approximately 22,000 individuals in those 17,000 households. And the reason that we think that happened is because sometimes we thought we would be speaking with one person, and then once someone was interested, they would call over their neighbors or their friends, and then our peer educators were actually having a 15 to 60 minute conversation with a small group instead of just an individual. So we reached quite a few people, and similarly, when we looked at our end line that we ran at the end of the initiative, 45% of respondents to our end line survey who were exposed to our initiative and to this particular door-to-door intervention said that they learned something new or did something different regarding cancer. So I'm going to show you a quick video which actually talks about the whole initiative and the success of it, and also a little bit about the success of this door-to-door piece. Oh. My volume isn't up. I'm going to turn it on back here. That's helping. Better. I can send you the link to the video if you're interested in seeing it. and tested that, and it didn't, it played before, no problem, so. Anyway, I just wanted to finish up by saying that, in conclusion, we really saw with that door-to-door campaign that there was a couple of lessons that we learned. Interpersonal communication in our campaign, in our initiative, has shown to be more effective in changing people's attitudes and behaviors, and I should justify that by saying more than just using mass communication alone. Similarly, we see that communities benefit from talking about cancer in a personalized, very face-to-face, one-on-one type of setting, and that sharing the stories of real survivors, so a variety of different individuals who are truly impacted, have stories to share, putting those stories out there so someone can say that person is from my community, that person looks like me, or they have similar qualities to me, can really change perceptions around cancer. And then with this population of educators in particular, empowering young adults who we found really to be an especially inspired population can lead to organic community mobilization and enhanced local ownership and sustainability. So even though this project ended in 2011 and we had hoped to see a lot of real sustainability through some increased funding, now there's no increased funding that has gone into the project, these peer educators have continued to go door to door. And it's because they were inspired by the change that they saw in their own communities, and it's even spawned new activities. So some of them have done things like create support groups to go around to individuals who have cancer and do candlelight vigils for them. I mean, it's really amazing to see the amount of the surge in community activity and the energy that's been elevated as a result of engaging some pretty inspired individuals. So I'll leave you with that. Thank you.
We have about 10 more minutes, so if anyone has any questions for any of our panelists, please. Yeah? Go ahead.
Sorry. In the last presentation, I wanted to know, do you have a cost per beneficiary?
No, I don't on hand, but if you're interested in getting that information, I can definitely reach out to you and share some of the cost information with you.
And did you get to help peer educators for Chosen?
Yes. We worked initially through existing community organizations. So, for example, one community we worked with a group called DKT, and they were doing HIV and AIDS peer educational efforts already. And since there weren't already groups that existed who were doing peer educational efforts around cancer, we engaged their leadership to see if they were interested in working with us. The training that we did was actually on building their basic awareness around the cancer knowledge that we needed them to impart. And so we utilized the existing resources that were there, and then if we didn't have enough in a community, then we solicited through other mechanisms, local youth groups, community leaders, et cetera, to see if we could get some volunteer interest there.
Thank you.